I want to welcome you all into episode number 8 of the Main Rundown. As always, I'm Zach Tarenko here alongside my co-host Jeff Christianberry. Jeff, we're heading right into summer. We're just about there. I mean, first couple of days of May. How are we feeling?
Doing okay. It's for those of us in education, the next month, 6 weeks are just insane. So, you know, the month of May is usually pretty nice, but it's a lot of finishing up things, a lot of concerts, graduation to plan for. So, and spring sports obviously are here, and I feel bad because like the spring sports season doesn't get as much love because people are ready to be outside and do other things. And it goes so fast. Then a month and a half from now, everything's going to be done, which is kind of shit, which is like shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I'm definitely excited to be home. I mean, I'm just about there. You know, like maybe like 6 days left before I'm
1 year down already. I mean, it's going to go fast. Before you know it, you're going to be like a second semester of your junior year, and it's going to be like, what the heck?
Yeah, actually, it's crazy. I don't know how it went so fast, but I'm ready for the summer. I'm ready to be back at Ken's place, working hard, you know, doing the summer things. But we'll get right into it this week with our rundown topics. And usually I'd let you go first, but I have to get my first one off here. I have to go right into it. The Boston Bruins lost, which, you know, game 6 would have been last night from recording this on Friday. Lost games 5 and 6, up 3-1 in the series. For those Bruins fans out there, people don't know, this is exactly what happened last year. Boston was up 3-1 on Florida, lost 5, lost 6, and eventually lost 7. We don't know what's going to happen yet with Toronto, but I just don't know what's happening. I mean, this Boston team had such an interesting season, you know, came in with low expectations because of where the team was, where the cap was, knew they needed to use that gap year. They blow it out of the water. They were top of the Atlantic most of the year. And then, you know, they, towards the end of it, kind of fell off and ended up in the second in the Atlantic. And, you know, it was a solid spot playing Toronto, up 3-1. Boston looked like a solid team. The last two games, it's just been low scoring, no offense. A lot of stuff's been missing. And now they head back into a game 7 with Toronto and a Toronto team that's been it's going, you know, red hot into this game 7. As a fan, I'm nervous when I look at this from the perspective of just, you know, looking in on this Boston team. I'm worried about what, you know, if they, let's just say they lose game 7. I'm worried about what's going to happen to this team. You know, I've seen a lot right now in the news about, you know, if Jim Montgomery loses for opening round series being up 3-1, his job is not safe. His job is not, you know, safe because, yes, he had, you know, statistically the best NHL season of all time last year, but still, you know, your job's never going to be 100%. You know, secure. So I'm interested to see what happens in game 7. I believe I'll be at that game, which is pretty cool, this weekend, which should be exciting. But I guess I want to get your thoughts. You know, what have you thought about these last two games? Where do you think Boston is right now? And game 7, who do you think is going to win?
First off, I think the Bruins are going to win game 7. And I know that goes against everybody this morning. Every Bruins fan is so downtrodden. Oh, you know, but it's like this team is good enough to win a game 7 at home. And something's got to give because either the Bruins are going to blow back-to-back 3-1 leads or the Leafs are going to win their first game 7 in like 8 attempts. They've lost like 6 or 7 straight game 7. So something's got to give there. For me, it's when you look at it, I'm not surprised that they're struggling. And I will say, even though I think they're going to win game 7, I think Florida will mollyhawk them, as they say.
Oh, I agree.
If they get there. But here's the thing. For me, it's more surprising on how good of a regular season they had. Because as I looked at this team, I said, you know, over the last couple of years, you lose Chara, you lose Bergeron. These guys can't just be replaced. And if you look at, let's take a last night's game. I mean, the overall problem with the Bruins hasn't been Swayman or even Ullmark. It's been, you know, some defenders, but also the forwards and the centers, scoring goals. And going into the series, that was the thing. I was like, all right. Is this team ready to step up and have, you know, they don't have a Hall. What's the guy's first name that they had the last couple of years?
Taylor Hall?
The forward.
David Krejci?
No, they had Krejci. Who's the big guy they traded for? He used to be like, was like a top 5 pick, and now he moved on. Taylor something.
Taylor Hall.
Taylor Hall. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Taylor Hall. They had Krejci. They had all these guys that would not be the goal scorer, but would kind of step up. And now they don't really have those guys. They have Pastrnak and they have Marchand. That's pretty much it. And you need more guys to step up more than just one game. And I think for me, the biggest thing last night is disappointing was the play of Charlie McAvoy. And certainly the last few games. Look, Zdeno Chara was a freak. He's a once in a generation player. You can't obviously replace him, but McAvoy, they paid him the big money. And if you look at that first goal last night, it was 100% on him. He was standing in front of the net, screening Swayman without a maple leaf within 3 or 4 feet. And a pretty routine shot from the sideboards goes in, and Swayman immediately looks at McAvoy and gives him one of these, like, completely his fault. McAvoy was in no man's land. That's the kind of stuff where he's not that young anymore. He's making a ton of money. He needs to step up and become a leader, maybe score some goals, but certainly be better than he was. Pasternak's got to start scoring. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, and you saw David Montgomery actually called him out. He has to start scoring. But again, you look at the Leafs, they're not getting anything from Austin Matthews, you know, either. So it's been a wacky series. I think the regular season, if you look at the regular season for the Bruins, as I mentioned before, they didn't have that many more wins than teams like Toronto and others around them. They had
a lot of OT losses.
A lot of OT losses, like 15 of them. And if even two or three of those turn into actual losses, like in regulation, then we're talking about a team who would have been in the top two or three. They would have been down near the bottom of the Eastern Conference or of the playoffs, which I think is really more where they're geared towards. So for me, obviously, if they lose tomorrow night, Montgomery, I think, loses his job. I don't know if he should. For me, the biggest problem is they're not scoring goals. And you saw in that third period last night, they're just not getting shots. Like the Leafs have come up with a great plan to kind of clog the middle of the ice. Their forwards aren't getting good shots. And when they're getting those opportunities, they're missing the net completely. So one shot in a period last night is unforgivable for the whole team. You cannot have one shot in a period in a game six where you can close them out. I still think they're going to win game seven.
Yeah.
I could see them winning 3 or 4 to 1. I just think, you know, yeah, the Leafs have the momentum, but if some of those shots start going in, I think they'll be better off. But again, what does it look like next year? Let's say they go and they lose to Florida in 5, 6 games or even 4 games, you know, Marchand's still getting up there. This team has a long way to go to become a perennial power again.
I agree. You know, as a fan, as I look in on this team, you know, I don't think – I'm not hitting the panic button on the, oh, we lost, you know, let's just – again, assuming they lose, which I don't think they're going to lose, but let's just assume they lose. You know, I'm not hitting the panic button saying let Montgomery go. I'm someone who thinks Montgomery has that coaching ability, who's someone that you want to keep. But it makes me think about a guy like Doc Rivers with the 76ers. Mm-hmm. It makes me think about how long – this happened. The regular season was solid. They had good players. They had good teams. And they would choke in the playoffs. And they kept him over and over and over again until they ended up firing him. But for years, they said, it's going to change. It's going to change. Trust the process, as they always said. And it never worked. So 2 years in a row, especially where my own opinion is that, you know, losing series like this is a lot less common in the NHL. I think it's more common in other sports, but it makes me worried. I don't know what's, you know, because last season was a crazy fluke. I don't even know what you want to call it, but 2 years in a row, if they lose tomorrow, could be really interesting. I will say, though, I saw a pretty interesting stat. So the last two times that Toronto and Boston have gone to a Game 7 was 2018 and 2013. And in both of those series, the games that were won from Games 1 to 6 is the exact same as this. Boston wins Game 1, Toronto wins Game 2, Boston wins Games 3 and 4, Toronto wins 5 and 6, forces a 7. They were in Boston for 13 and 18, and Boston won those games. So,
wow.
You know, It's a weird coincidence.
Isn't that the game, one of those games, Toronto was up 3-0 or something in game 7 and ended up losing?
2013 was when they were up 3-0 or 4-1 with like 8 minutes left, and Boston tied it and then scored the
first. I don't see that comeback this time if that happens.
I don't either. But I mean, you mentioned it too. My last point about this is you know, the star players need to step up. I mean, even Jim Montgomery even said it last night in the post-game press conference. He plain and simple. David Pastrnak needs to be better, and that's true. You know, I think Toronto has gotten away with Matthews being out for some of these games, but also for not playing very well. But then you look at David Pastrnak, and he just hasn't been anywhere. And when your best player, your best player, isn't showing up, it's not going to get you far in an opening round series, and for sure won't get them any farther against the Panthers if they are to make the next series. So we'll have to see. I'm interested being there. I'm excited, but I am nervous. I'm going to be very, very nervous for the game.
Should be a good one. My first run on topic is the USL to Portland, which now we finally have a name to talk about them. They're not just the USL to Portland. Last Saturday, there was the event in Thompson's Point. I attended kind of the brand reveal. Unbelievable event. I mean, I don't know how many people there is. At least 500 people, if not closer to 1,000. They had a lot of cool stuff for kids. They had the kind of the brand reveal, some great food, drinks, all that good stuff. Premier League games are on. So they are officially now the Portland Hearts of Pine. Now, a lot of people are like, well, what the heck does that mean? So again, Hearts is basically, you know, what these U.S. teams are doing is they try to copy or mimic what you see over in Europe. And there's this team in Scotland called Hearts of Midlothian. And I'm probably butchering that name. Hearts of Midlothian. And it's not like that team plays in a place called Midlothian. Okay, that's just basically the name kind of their area or like their nickname. So when you first see that, you might be like, whoa, Hearts of Pine. I will say this. I think 95% of the time, they're either going to be called Portland or they can be called Hearts, right? Because Hearts is, you look at that Scottish team, they're not called Hearts of Midlothian all the time. They're called Hearts, right? And so that's, I think, what you're going to call them. I think the name will take some getting used to for a lot of people. But again, we also have we're in a city with a team called the Sea Dogs, okay, which is the stupidest name I think ever. I'm not saying the mascot's stupid, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, can't beat Slugger. No one will ever beat Slugger.
But I will say, I think the crest is a home run. I saw the crest, and it's like it's got the heart, it's got the green, it has everything to do with Portland. So I think the stuff's awesome. Just some news with that. They had some merch sales. I bought some merch. I didn't buy it there. The line was crazy long. I bought some online. But people can go on and make a deposit for season tickets. You're not actually buying your tickets. You're just saying, I want to buy them. I think it's $25 to put your deposit down. There's basically four sections. There's like general admission, premium, supporter section, and then like corporate. And I put a deposit down. My buddy Chris Danka, who we had on the pod earlier, we're going to kind of go in on some premium tickets together. We're too old to sit in the supporter section. I mean, God bless him, but like the change of understanding and all that stuff, like it's not for me anymore. But some awesome news. They've been sending out a lot of updates. And there is a Discord, by the way. If you're interested in learning, you can go on the Hearts of Pine Discord and join that. They sold, I think it's, I don't know if it was just under or just over 2,000 season ticket deposits. Now, not 100% of those will turn into season tickets, but a lot of them will. They're less than 500 away from the USL one record for most deposits, season ticket deposits in the first week. So they're doing a push for that. So I think it's just really cool. I mean, I think it's going to be a really cool experience. Again, they'll be playing in USL League One, which is the third tier of American football, soccer. it'll start next March. I'm sure they'll start the renovations pretty soon on Fitzpatrick Stadium. I don't want to talk about it too much because we are going to try to have Gabe Huffman Johnson on soon. Hopefully next week we can have him on and have a full pod just about where the name came from, where the idea came from. You know, Tom Caron's involved, so it's a huge thing, and what the next steps are. So just want to throw that out there. It's a great event, and if you're interested, you can go to heartsofpine.com, check out the merch, check out season ticket deposits, and it's exciting. It's just going to be a cool thing. It's going to be so different than the main Celtics, the Sea Dogs, and the Mariners. Like, those are great, but almost all of them are connected to another team or you have that component. This is kind of its own entity, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think I've said this before and had this conversation, but at the end of the day, you know, forget the team. Like, when I step back, I just look at this and, like, watching on Instagram Reels and seeing all the, you know, photos and videos from the event at Brick South and Thompson's Point, which I must say, Brick South, super cool venue. I've been there before.
I've never been in there. Very cool.
Yeah. I've been there for a wedding and it's just awesome. It's just awesome.
You must have spent so much money on that wedding. I thought of that when you said that. I'm like, this place for a wedding.
Yeah. No, a lot of people. It was cool. But, you know, it's just, it gives me pride. Like, I'm like, this is cool. Like, that people care about this. Forget who the team is. Forget why they're there. It's just to see that many people showing up for something about Maine is pretty cool. And I like the point you made about it's almost by itself. You know, it's not connected to a Boston professional sports team. It's not, this is a startup in Maine by itself. And you're seeing this type of engagement and the people, you know, who are interested is really, really awesome. That record, I think, is really cool. I actually got an email about 20 minutes before we started recording from Hearts of Pine because I subscribed to all their stuff and newsletter. And it was basically like, we're closing on the record, like put your deposits down now. But it's super cool. Like you said, we'll get into it more, so I don't want to give too many thoughts. I'm actually the opposite of not opposite. I am going into it, I had no idea. Like we were talking about this last week. I had no idea what the name was going to be. I had no idea what they were going to do. I think it's interesting, and I like that they're being different. I think they could have gone something simple like Portland Pines. They could have done Portland Lobsters. They could have, you know, they're trying something different, and I think it's different. It's going to be interesting. The logo, it's a little busy for me. I really think they could have just simply gone very, very simple, which I mean, that's my own personal take. I like simple, modern logos that don't have a lot going on. But overall, I bought merch too, and I'm super excited for it to come in.
I want to wear it if we get Gabe on. I want to definitely wear it. I should be another week or so when it comes, but we'll see. But I agree. The logo, again, there's two different schools of thought because there are a lot of the recent logos, modern ones, are very simple. But then again, you look at like Liverpool's logo, and there's so much going on.
There's so much colors going on.
There's all these little things. Manchester United, their logo is a little more busier than you think. Then you look at some of the MLS ones, and they're super simple, which I like that too. But it's just, you know, it's – because you got to think about it. I know I'm a branding person. That's what I do for a living. And it's like you have to think about what's going to look on merch, what's going to look on a huge TIFO, what's going to – you know, it's kind of tough to make that. I'm curious what the process was to go through and make that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. And like you said, we'll get more into it. So we'll end it there. But no, super, super cool. I'm hoping to get to games next. I'm assuming they'll play through the summer. So hoping to get to games. And I at the end of the day, I really am interested. And this is something I really want to ask Gabe about is what – when is this renovation going to get done? And what's it going to look like too? Because I'm picturing – Fitzpatrick Stadium, and many people out there probably know what it looks like, but doesn't. You know, it's tight space. You don't have a lot of expansion space because of Hadlock Field and kind of the road and the turnpike right behind there. But I'm interested to see what they can do with that, because I think it's either going to look really, really cool and it's going to be a really awesome place to go, or it's just going to be like a nightmare, like the State game where there's no parking and it's an interesting stadium right now. I hope it can turn out to something where, you know, it's great for a League One USL team. But yeah, let's do it.
Up the hearts. Let's go.
Up the hearts. but I'll head into my second rundown topic now. And I want to talk about – there's not really a topic of the week, more just a topic in general. I want to talk about sports broadcasters from Maine. Obviously, if you haven't been following Boston sports – Mike Gorman and Jack Edwards are retiring roughly the same time. I mean, Mike Gorman's last game was two days ago.
Whenever they finished.
Jack Edwards was last night because ABC has the full rights to Game 7, so Nesson will not be providing coverage. It's sad. It's sad moving on. But it makes me think about broadcasters, especially here in Maine, that have been important, influential people that I follow, people that I enjoy. And so right now I'm going to ask you first to give me who you think the best broadcaster, and let's just say someone who has eyes either from Maine or has a connection to Maine. Doesn't have to be from Maine, but a connection to Maine. Who do you think the best broadcaster we've ever had connected to Maine? And who is your favorite? Somebody that you could turn on a TV and listen to them any time of the day, any for whatever reason.
Yeah, so as far as the best, it's kind of tough to tell who's the best. I mean, you look at a guy like Dale Arnold. I mean, what he did, he was not really a true play-by-play guy for a long time, but he was so dynamic, and it was really cool to talk to him because he's done play-by-play, he's done straight talk radio, he's done on-TV studio talking, he's done Patriots, he's done Bruins in terms of actually working for the teams or working for the broadcast for the teams. So for him, he's, I feel like, the most accomplished in terms of the dynamic part of it. And that's, you know, when I talk to students, when I used to be my student, and I talk to the current guys, it's like it's about being dynamic, and it's being just kind of a one-trick pony is really tough to pull off in this world. So for him, I'd say the best, most accomplished. For me, my favorite is actually Gary Thorne. Gary Thorne is from Bangor originally. And I didn't look up his total bio. I don't know how long he was in Maine for. From Bangor, though. Why I love Gary Thorne, he does baseball and hockey mostly. Or used to do a lot of hockey. I think he's the Orioles play-by-play guy. He does some national games, too. But he for me, was the voice of my childhood for hockey. He was the voice of ESPN when the NHL used to be on there. And I used to watch him in the playoffs, and he just, his goal call was great. Everybody loves Doc Emmerich. That's great. But this is before Emmerich was really as popular, because ESPN basically held all the rights for many years in the 90s mm-hmm. and early 2000s before NBC took over. But Gary Thorne, for me, was that guy. Like, when he would call that goal score in overtime, just like – and I used to be a Penguins fan when I was a kid. I like Lemieux and Yager, and they had a lot of overtime games in the early playoffs. And, like, he, just hearing that and my favorite call of his – was 2009 Boston University national championship game.
Of course, it's BU.
Down two goals under a minute to go against Miami of Ohio. He's calling the game, and we score the first goal, and he says score. I was watching it in my room, and I was like, okay, we scored one. And then we scored again with like 20 seconds left. And I'm literally getting goosebumps just thinking about it. Like, his goal call was just like, I screamed louder than I probably ever screamed before in my life when he's tied, and then we won in overtime. I watched that clip, you know, a million times, and it was cooler for him to be the one there. So Gary Thorne is my guy. He's so dynamic. He's got that classic play-by-play voice. So he's my favorite main guy. And I like a lot of them. Gary Tangway, like all these other guys, like, I'm all into them too. But Gary Thorne's my guy.
Yeah. I have my favorite, which you mentioned, and then I have another also like sneaky surprise one that kind of hit me this year. But Mike Emmerich is mine. Broadcast for the Mariners for a lot of years and then moved on to the professional higher up sports. But the reason why is because, not even at the Mariners, because I wasn't alive back when he was broadcasting with the Mariners, but you know, I look at where this hockey is now with ESPN. Obviously they made that change from NBCSN and the kind of not very consistent coverage to ESPN. I'm happy to see that and the hockey is getting more coverage. But ESPN now, the broadcasters are solid people, solid broadcasters. I like them, but it's nothing special. It's nothing iconic, nothing that really hits me. And I just remember when I really, really got into hockey when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, the NBCSN, you know, Mike Emmerich, Eddie Olczyk, you know, watching those playoff games, watching
Pierre, Mike. Was it Pierre between the boards? Who was the guy between the boards?
Yeah.
It was kind of weird.
But just that coverage was just, it was so consistent when they were on. It was just like, you know, from the first whistle to the final whistle, I loved listening to Mike Emmerich. He was one of the big reasons why I got into broadcasting, and somebody that I really looked up to. It's just nobody else, I think, in my opinion, like, yells the way he does. I mean, I know you can probably imagine, just like, look back to some of his games from 2014 to 2016, when he would just like, his voice cracks were like iconic. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd ever hear someone where I could say a voice crack was iconic, and I actually liked the voice crack. But like, when he would just go wild for overtime goals or for whatever it might be, was a big part of it for me. And so that's who I think my favorite is. I will also say this, and this is not, you know, I wouldn't say it's my favorite because I just told you my favorite, but I did watch a lot of UMaine hockey this year. I like a lot. When they started to become good, I thought, oh, let me see what's about this. And I watched a lot of ESPN Plus, and I have to give a shout out to Jeff Mannix, because I really like the type of coverage and the way that he calls games. I really like what Jeff Mannix brings to the table. It was something different. I liked how he covers games. I thought he's a good broadcaster. And so kind of a sneaky surprise, because I hadn't really listened to Jeff Mannix call any games before UMaine hockey this year. So it was pretty cool. But I had to give a shout out to Jeff there, because I thought he did a great job this year and had a lot of great calls for UMaine, who had a pretty solid year until the tournament.
And we had another good friend who was on those broadcasts too, which helped, you know, at least between the periods.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, you mentioned, you know, the NBC coverage. And for me, it was, when I think of hockey, which again, hockey was never my favorite sport watching growing up, but like, it was like Steve Levy, Barry Melrose in the studio, sometimes at the games, and Gary Thorne. I mean, those were, you know, that's, you know, your childhood. You remember those kind of things. It's just pretty cool to think about, you know, where it was. And Barry Melrose has passed away recently, unfortunately, too. So,
yeah. And then there's different types of coverage now, like the pregame, postgame type stuff, not even for hockey. That's become so big. I mean, I'll bring it up later in my topics, but the inside the NBA stuff has become such a big watch. And I look at the NHL on TNT now, and you still have Liam McHugh there, who I love and was at NBC back, you know, we look back with like Mike Middlebury when he was still doing coverage. But now it's like Paul Bissonnette just trying to make jokes. And do I think Paul Bissonnette is funny? I think it's. Yes. I think he's hilarious. But it's almost, it doesn't, it's not like frustrating. It's just like, I look back and I think of how awesome that NBC coverage was in my eyes. And I look at it now and I turn on the TV at intermission, and Paul Bissonnette is just acting like a fool. And I'm like, it's just really, you know, it's just really the type of coverage that I enjoy, because I enjoyed when Liam McHugh and Mike Milbury were talking, and then they go right back to Eddie Olczyk and Mike Emmerich. And, you know, it's changed a lot. And, you know,
well, it's hard too, because, like, for me, I'm never going to watch intermission, but with Bissonnette on, I might, because he, especially during, like, he did this little rant the other night against, I think it was the Rangers Washington series, and he did this whole rant about how a hustle play by, I think, a guy from the Capitals, and, like, comes back and he's going crazy. He's, like, checking his pulse, and it's funny. Like, for me, I get it. It's hokey stuff, which I don't love on all these networks anymore. But for someone who's a super casual hockey fan, like, that for me, I remember I watched that clip two or three times. Like, that's something for me, and I get it. It's not exactly the most intense, view of the game, but it does help for entertainment.
Yeah, and Bissonnette, the one thing that does – like you said, he's bringing that new type of coverage. People listen to him to enjoy and laugh and joke around. But the one thing I still can't get over, and I will never get over, is the extra level of bias he brings. I understand you're a Maple Leafs fan. And, you know, like, for example, Henrik Lundqvist was a Rangers goalkeeper. Of course he's going to be biased to the Rangers. But when he goes on and he's giving coverage, he's not talking about the Rangers. I don't know if you've listened to this series or listened for this playoffs at all, but Bissonnette, like, talks about Toronto so much and, like, makes fun of the Boston players. And, like, it's just – it's almost too much bias for me. Like, I get it. You're a big Toronto guy, but, like, everyone's heard you say it 100 times. Nobody really wants to hear it again, right? So
– yeah, I think the hard part too, though, if you look at – if you compare it to NBA, NFL, NHL – you know, over the years, the NHL former player who becomes a broadcaster, not so much play-by-player color, but in the studio, they're usually pretty boring. Like, if you look at, again, and you look at the college hockey coverage from the tournament hockeys, like, those guys are boring. Like, I would always turn it off during the mid-periods, because they're older players who are smart with the game, but they just don't have that much presence. It's just how hockey players are. This man is a totally different kind of character. That's just what Barkley was the same way. Like, that's why Barkley became, you know, as popular as he is, because he'll say whatever he thinks. So it's an interesting topic. I definitely have, maybe someday we'll do, like, who is our favorite, you know, play-by-play color tandem for any sport, because I have a very good one, but we'll save that for another episode. My second topic, you mentioned the Maine Mariners during our discussion there, and I want to mention them. Their season is over. They lost in Game 7 to Adirondack 2-0 the other day. It was a back-and-forth series, but they fall in the North Division semifinals. So, you know, good season for them, I guess, get to the playoffs to make that deep of a run. So, you can talk about a little bit about their season if you followed them a little bit, because you used to work for them. Mm-hmm. But, I just think of it in the bigger sense. And I've talked to people who go to Mariners games, and they're all always like, wow, it's a lot. Again, frankly, they say, oh, it's a lot more fun than I thought. I've never been to one, but I used to go to some Pirates games. And for me, again, very casual hockey fan, the Pirates I knew were in the AHL. Right. And so you knew a lot of those guys were a farm of the – who the heck were we the farm system of?
So
– Portland, obviously, but who were we?
For the Pirates?
Yeah.
The Pirates moved around. So it was Anaheim, a little – maybe? For it was a little bit Buffalo, and then it was the Coyotes when they were still – the original Coyotes in Arizona.
Yeah.
Or Phoenix. It was Phoenix first. When they were Phoenix originally, then Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's tough. So, but, you know, it was – for me, it felt like, all right, this is like – minor league, like either AAA or AA hockey. Mariners, you know, they go away, unfortunately, which sucked for the city, because then with a lot of Pirates fans. And then obviously the Mariners come in 2017-ish for the ECHL. And for me, you know, it's a different logo and colors than the original. Because I used to look up at the Civic Center.
It was like an orange.
It looked like the Flyers, kind of, basically.
Yep.
The Flyers. But you'd see the Mariner, you know, see the Calder Cup for the AHL for the Pirates when they won it. And then you see the Maine Mariners. And I was wondering, like, what's that about? They come back, ECHL. For me, it's just not – I don't love hockey enough to be like, oh, I want to go watch some random dudes play. And I know some of them will eventually maybe make the NHL, but it just seems like a different thing. So you worked for them. You did the social media. How do you think that they talk about overcoming that? And their crowds seem to be pretty good. I'm not saying they're not. But just how do you make that connection to get more and more people involved? Because they're making the playoffs every year, basically.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing to look at, because it's almost like they're not – you'd think an organization is 100% focused on winning. You know, we're going to get more fans in the door. We're going to get more people excited about this by winning. you know, whatever that, well, in the ECHL, the Kelly Cup, that's the equivalent of the Stanley Cup. But to me, that's not what ECHL hockey is. Not even Mariners, just ECHL hockey. Like the Mariners, when they came back, they knew that they needed to pull themselves away from this whole mindset of like, we're the AHL. These are guys that you're going to might see in the NHL in a few years. It was less about that and more about let's make, you know, grow this fan base up from people who are coming to games. They may not care about what the final score is. They may not care about where they are in the standings. They may not care about how good each individual player is and if they're going to make it up to the professional leagues in the future. It's about watching hockey and enjoying the game of hockey. And I think that the Mariners PR team, the marketing team, the media team, I mean, I was a part of that and I got to see this from behind the scenes, do an incredible job of getting people excited just to come to the game, show up and watch. And because at the end of the day, yes, the Mariners lost to Adirondack and, you know, haven't really made it past an opening round in the playoffs. It was their fifth season. But you're looking at how many times they've sold out these past 2 years compared to when they first started. You compare to how the Portland team was, because when the Portland Pirates were here, they weren't selling out all the time. The Pirates were not very successful. And I just think overall, you know, you look at this whole just like what they've built together for the Mariners, I think is really, really key. And I think they are hitting a different type of fan base and they're hitting it well. They know what they need to be going for and they do that. I think when you look 10 years ahead, of course they're going to need to have some success in the Kelly Cup playoffs. They're going to need to win something. They're going to need to make it farther than an opening round. But they had a really I've talked to some of the people who are in that organization, and I did, you know, followed it a lot last year. They, you know, they might lose a weekend series, but you look at how many people showed up, and everybody behind the scenes is like, we had a great weekend because of what they had for fan events, what they had for attendance. So I think they had a great year, had a lot of great content. It sucks to see them lose because, like you said, I feel they somehow willed their way to a playoffs this year, which is just baffling to me because they started the season not well. Mm-hmm. But overall, it was a good year for them.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll see. Again, when the Pirates, they had some diehards, but the problem was it was really all about winning in NHL guys. But then again, you're cheering for NHL guys who are never going to play for the Bruins. That made it super difficult. But it's good to see the Mariners are focusing more on like the one-off. Like, you're going to come and have a fun experience, no matter who's really on the ice. You know, so that's as long as the marketing works, that's great. Maybe I'll have to go to a game next year. You'll have to take me and show me what it's all about.
Yeah, I could do that. All right, so I'll head into my last rundown topic, and just want to talk about a situation that's been going on the last couple of days almost, or week or so. If you don't know, right now, the inside the NBA, which I mentioned, we talked about Charles Barkley, Shaq, Kenny Smith. Yep. Kenny the Jet Smith, yep. Kenny, right? Smith, yep. And then Ernie Johnson, obviously. Everyone must know who Ernie Johnson is. Basically, they work, or the network that they go for is the Turner Sports Network. But in the last couple of weeks or so, the NBA and also I believe it's ESPN is what is kind of they're trying to go towards, is trying to buy them out. They're trying to move inside the NBA coverage to ESPN or, you know,
NBC as well. NBC has a bid on it again.
NBC Discovery or something. I'm not sure. I tried to read up on this. It was hard seeing how it would actually move. But basically, some of the people, including Ernie Johnson, have said, I'm going to stay. I want to stay with Turner. They like the broadcasting network of Turner, which doesn't really do many other sports except for inside the NBA or any other coverage. But it begs the question of, okay, what will happen if it gets moved? And that's Ernie Johnson would no longer be covering anything and something like that. And so it's just very interesting to me the type of loyalty you see from Ernie Johnson saying, I want to stay with this broadcasting network. It's not that I don't like ESPN or NBC. I just want to stay with Turner. So we did talk about broadcasting a little bit, but I now kind of want to talk about the inside the NBA. I just want to talk about this for a second. How did this become so popular? I mean, I obviously watch the funny moments. I listen to when Shaq and Chuck talk about San Antonio women or whatever they go into. But just, I guess I want to ask you is why do you think inside the NBA is so big? And what do you think might happen to them and to the show if it moves to ESPN and a guy like Ernie Johnson or a guy like Kenny Smith is no longer on the show.
Well, it won't be the same for sure. I mean, if you look at ESPN, they've tried for years to try to replicate that. They had a lot of different guys come through their kind of coverage for the finals. They had Bill Simmons on for a while. They had God, who's the guy from PTI? I'm blanking on his name. One of the guys from PTI.
Yeah.
Instead of the NBA, it works because of what the audience is now, because it's about the clips, right? The clips are hilarious. Like, I'm not tuning in to watch all their coverage, but I'll see the next day something that they crazy said on the broadcast. For me, it comes down to Charles. Charles is what stirs the whole thing. Now, Ernie's great and Kenny's fine. Shaq, for me, doesn't do it as much because he's come on only in the last few years and he's fine. Like, he's funny sometimes. Charles is what it is. There was a rumor that Charles, he got an offer from another network. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was something. Oh, maybe it's like Live Golf. Like, Live Golf is going to pay him like $50 million a year or something like that. And he decided to stay in basketball. I just think he's been going on some of the TNT hockey broadcasts, like him, and he's gone on to talk to Biz. Yep. Like, and he's
I did see that
hockey. It's really about the clips. So, and you've seen some broadcasters. So you take a guy like Mike Tirico, who was on ESPN forever, and he switched over to NBC at a very odd time because he basically gave up the spot to do – he was doing Monday Night Football for a while and basically was their highest-level play-by-play guy. He goes over to NBC, and he's doing, like, Olympics coverage or whatever. But eventually he gets on – you know, Al Michaels is going to go. He's going to be on NBC, Sunday Night Football a lot more. He's doing a lot more coverage because NBC is buying up these properties. So – these corporations will start thinking ahead, thinking like, all right, we know we're going to buy the World Cup this year, mm-hmm. and or we're going to buy the World Cup 8 years from now. So we want to get this guy in place so he's, you know, ready to go. Why is it? It's funny. It's casual. It's not really talking about the game very seriously, but people take them seriously. Meaning when someone like Charles or Kenny or Shaq talk, these two of those guys, I don't know if Kenny's a Hall of Famer, but the other two guys are no doubt Hall of Famers. Ernie Johnson's a great facilitator. Because he doesn't, what's great about him is all these shows now, all they do is grab ass, right? They just like to, and sometimes it's annoying because all they're doing is laughing at each other. I think of like the Fox NFL coverage, which is just abysmal. Like, mm-hmm. all they're doing is laughing at each other's jokes. And it's just not funny because at some point it's like, well, I don't know what you're really laughing about. Yeah. Anyway, so, and you know, with TNT, they do that as well, but it's just, we take, you know, when they talk about, Charles had a rant the other night about coaches and how it's absurd that you're going to see the Suns probably fire their coach. The Lakers fired their coach today. And he's like, it's not the coaching, it's these players. These players aren't playing well enough. That's you know, but when Charles says that, you're like, oh, makes sense. Like, that's, you know, so I think that's what makes it great. He's the one that stirs the drink. If he ever left, that show would never be the same again. I think I'm curious because I think NBC is really going to make a strong run at the NBA. I mean, I grew up watching the NBA and NBC. They have the best theme song in all of sports for their NBA and NBC, written by John Tesh. Just kind of a little trivia thing. But yeah, so I'd be surprised if they all got moved over to ESPN or NBC for that matter. But that's what makes it works. Charles is what makes it work.
Yeah. I don't know if you agree with this point, but like the way I see it is like, first off, I will say a lot of times they talk about or topics of like inappropriate stuff come up all the time. I mean, I mentioned it there in my intro. It's like the San Antonio woman conversation that Charles had with Shaq about, like, just it went off the rails quickly. But it almost feels like in the last maybe two years, we've seen they're given they're given a larger spectrum of what they can and can't say. Like, I think the producers have almost realized when Charles starts talking about something inappropriate, it's funny and we get more viewers and we get more content and we get more followers out of it. So I don't care if Charles goes on some rant about something crazy that he probably shouldn't be talking about. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that, but I feel like in the last couple of years, it's gotten more, not inappropriate, but it's gotten funnier because they're given more of a what they can and can't say.
No question about it. They have a little bit more leeway because that's what they want. They want the clips. So, sorry, I'm choking right now, but but no, I agree with you. The more leeway they get, the better. But they can't. They got to be careful what roads they go down because you don't want to offend people. Because very easy to do here in 2024.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Awesome. All right, my final topic is staying here in Maine, talking about ESPN. Greeley third baseman Markey Axelson the other day, made an incredible diving catch. Someone was trying to bunt. He's a third baseman. He dove, like, basically into foul territory, caught the ball, spun up, threw it to first, and doubled the play up. It made it onto SportsCenter's top 10, number 3, the other night. Interesting, they play in turf out there, which we've talked about in the past, but it's all totally turf field. That's what I noticed there. But so it makes it all the way to number 3 on SportsCenter's top 10 list for, I forget what night it was. So I want to ask you, what is the best play that you've ever seen that youth in Maine in person that should have been in SportsCenter's top 10? I'm going to give you my two. My runner up is Peyton Jones, basketball player for us. A couple of years ago, I want to say this is 2018. I could be wrong on that. 2018, 2019, roughly.
I know you're talking about.
You called this, right?
It was you and me, and it was one of my first calls. And the call is so funny because that's back when I didn't want to like talk too much. I didn't want to go too crazy. I wanted to keep testing the waters. And I remember the call, and I saw it happening. I was like, oh, and he goes up for that dunk, and then you come up with the energy, and you're like, ah,
you're like, oh, you said the alley-oop. Like, you didn't even know what to say. It was.
But yeah. That was a great play.
Yeah. So that was a great play. No, look. Now, was that as good as what you see in the college NBA? No, but it was just so cool for Maine moment. The one that absolutely should have made it on there was, again, I'm going to butcher the year. I don't know, maybe it's 2021. We had a unified basketball game at Thornton Academy, which is unified as a program where basically people with mental challenges are partnered with other day students and dorm students, and they play a game, and it's about activity. And we have a young man named Josh Ross, who was on our team at Thornton Academy, and every game would go out there, I think right at halftime, and he'd stand at half court, turn around, and throw a shot behind his head. And let's just say most of the time, it didn't go the right direction. Yeah. And then one day, he hit the shot. And
in the game too, usually, because you're right, usually he would just do it like in the warm-ups. He would like throw him up and he hit it in the game.
There's a video of it. I wasn't there, unfortunately. I didn't go that day, which I'm really regretting. I saw a video. I mean, it's not great quality. Someone's on someone's cell phone. It's the second most liked post in our history of our school's social media, like 4,000 likes or something crazy. We tried for days to try to get that on SportsCenter. Like, what a story. Didn't make it on there, but that was, the best athletic achievement I ever saw, where I was like, that should be on SportsCenter's top 10. So shout out to Josh Ross, who made the half-court shot here at Thornton Academy a few years ago that brought the house down.
What was the number one liked post?
You put me on the spot. It's something that happened this year, and it was something surprising. I don't know, maybe it's our state championship this year. There's something that I'll have to look back at. I'll report back next week, but it's something that I don't think it was sports related, to be honest. I forget what it was, but it was shared like 1400 times or something like that. But Josh Ross right up there forever. Yeah.
This is tough. Things that I saw that should have made SportsCenter top 10. Sidebar really quick. I have to say this. I had a guest speaker in one of my classes, or maybe it was for the Sports Network organization here in Quinnipiac, who a guy who works as an associate producer or something for ESPN, and he's cut the clips for SportsCenter's top 10, and he kind of explained it to the class about how they're done. And he kind of said, well, it depends on the person. Anybody can kind of pick whatever they want to pick. It's kind of really up to them, which almost made me a little bit mad, because I was like, I thought this was like everybody came together and like they took like a survey of, okay, what's the top 10? But it's just one person. Like, let's just say I did it. I could pick a bunch of Maine sports if I wanted to. Like, I pretend I could. But anyways, I'm trying to think. I am trying to think about what I've seen.
I'll give you another one that I think you called. Maybe you called her. I'm not sure. Remember the Cape TA lacrosse game a couple years ago where Cape scored like two – or no, TA scored like with no one, time left on the clock. Yeah. I mean, that was a miraculous comeback there.
Yeah.
The game in overtime.
The only two that I can come up with, like off the top of my head, was there was a goalie goal for the Maine Mariners when I was working last year. I don't think I ended up actually wasn't working for the media team during that specific game. But those are always really cool. And it was also a pretty cool goal because the goalie, Francois Brassard, I don't think he's currently still on the team, but he usually a goalie goal kind of comes out of nowhere. Like the puck just happens to be there, the goalie just does it. Like he took two big strides, came out and just like hit it at such a cool, it was like, it was so smooth. It came out and like slid on one knee and like flicked it up the right way. The only other one was, I called the game between TA and Brunswick hockey. I did a solo call by myself my junior year, and there was an OT goal. It was actually scored by Brunswick, kind of a heartbreaker for TA, but, the player kind of did like a half spin move, then had a backhand like top corner to score OT winner, which was pretty cool to call. But I think there are a lot of plays, like you said, plays like the Peyton Jones dunk, or the Josh Rosh behind the head, that to us are like the craziest things in the world. But then also you look at like what's happening in these college sports and for the professional sports, you think, okay, there's also other big plays too. But it means a lot more to us. And like you said, the story with Josh Ross with that is just incredible.
Okay, I just quickly looked it up, and it was a post that was this year about Lewiston. So at one of the games, we had put up at Hill Stadium, put up something that says, "We're with you, Lewiston," or something. And that was our most liked and shared post of all time,
I was about to say that. Like, I think it probably had something to do with either a game afterwards. I knew afterwards.
It was kind of sportsy, but not sportsy. Not really. So yeah.
All right, we are now going to head into our interview for this week, and we thought it was the right time to have Michael Hoffer back on. I had him on for the first episode, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was episode number one. He talked a little bit about winter sports, and we also had some other conversations as well, but going to have him back on for a quick spring sports update, so I want to welcome in Michael Hoffer. All right, we want to welcome in and welcome back, and I should be specific, Michael Hoffer, who is here with us earlier on in the early episodes, back on to talk about some spring sports here for high school sports in Maine. Hoffer, how are you doing today?
Doing great. It's good to be back on with you guys.
Yeah. So we'll get right into it. You know, obviously, I'm in Connecticut, and Jeff's been busy at TA, so we're coming to you for some expert advice. Can you talk about some of the teams that, you know, have had a great start to the spring sports season, whatever sport it might be? You know, just talk about what you've seen so far in the state of Maine for spring sports.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, probably the biggest thing is, you know, several of the preseason favorites have really lived up to billing nicely. You know, Falmouth baseball team's looking as good as anybody right now. They're going to get some tests down the road, but they were the preseason favorite. They've been to the semis each of the last five postseasons, so they're really eager to get over the hump. They had a really painful loss to TA last year in the semis, where they let a seventh inning lead slip away. So they're ready to atone for that and get up over the hump. They have Brandon Rumpf, who's their ace pitcher. He's heading to the University of Maine, and they've got the bats going too. They've got some big bats. They've been scoring in double digits almost every single game. So I would say at this point, they're the favorite in Class A South. You know how baseball is, though. You know, any given day, anything can happen come playoff time, but they're looking really strong. Boys lacrosse, girls lacrosse, you know, you're talking about the usual suspects for sure. Cape Elizabeth's boys team has now won 29 straight games. Although I tell you, this year, a little different. They're getting pushed. They've had 3-1 goal wins. They had to come from behind the other night to beat Yarmouth. So it isn't as easy as it's been in recent seasons, but their championship experience has kind of carried them through in these close games. And the Kennebunk's girls team is up to 55 straight wins, which is just unthinkable, but that's where they are. They survived a close call at Yarmouth the other night, and they're still going strong. Softball, Wyndham, the defending champs, undefeated so far, but a team to really keep an eye on right now is Chevres. Chevres with their new pitcher, Addison DeRoche. They've come out and they're winning big almost every time out. They play at Wyndham the final game of the regular season. I guarantee you that's a game that everyone's going to want to see, and that could be an instant classic. So, you know, that's the very, very short, the teams that you might expect, well, with the addition of maybe Chevres' softball team crashing the party there.
Yeah, so you mentioned some of the scores, especially for Cape, and I've been following the scores a lot. Again, not losing, but some closer games than we all expected. What have you seen from them so far? Is it they're underperforming a little bit, you know, again, more championship hangover, or is it these other teams that are kind of surprising early season?
I mean, I would say it's the other teams. I mean, Cape isn't quite the powerhouse they've been the last couple of years, where they just had, you know, wave after wave of college-bound talent. They still have Keegan Lathrop, who's playing next year at Delaware. you know, he's still probably their main guy. And then they have other guys step up here and there. But they beat a really good York team by one goal. York's the defending Class B champs. They beat Falmouth, their traditional rivals, by one goal at Falmouth. And then they came from behind the other night to win at Yarmouth, who's a very good Class B team. So it's really more the caliber of the opponent, I would say, than anything else. And I guess the good news for Cape is, even though they're getting pushed, they're finding ways to win these games. You know, they win faceoffs when they have to. They force turnovers when they have to. And they score goals when they have to. And that's what's going to make them so tough to dethrone. You know, everyone wants to beat them, but you have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because in general, you look at these all these sports right now, especially in the spring, where you're seeing such dominance. You see it, you know, and not just in those, you know, those kind of premier sports like baseball, lacrosse, but you look at something like tennis. It's like Falmouth, you know, is going to be there at the end for boys tennis. Like even the TA, who's a perennial power in boys tennis, it's really like, well, we know is going to be maybe one or two other teams that could beat us. Yeah. You're seeing that now in more and more sports where there's a team going on 20, 30, 50 win streaks. What does that say for those programs who are just continually year after year with graduations and other teams just continually doing that? In your experience, is it really more about the kids, the coaching, the youth league, or is it a combination? Like, how's that happen?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is these proud programs. I mean, it's not just this group of kids that has established that. In a lot of cases, we're going back decades. I mean, Cape's boys lacrosse program has been a powerhouse since the 90s, maybe even going back to the 80s. So you grow up in that town, you know what the expectations are. You want to be a part of it. You know, it's not like something that catches you by surprise once you get in high school. So, you know, I think it's the program's reputation itself. Obviously, you have great coaching, often from the youth level up, and those coaches don't get enough credit for what they do, getting, you know, kids ready to play at the high school level. And then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talent in these towns too, and you know, these kids have spent a lot of time not only in season, but in a lot of cases out of season too, honing their craft. So, you know, they're good, but there's a lot of other towns that have those good teams too. So, it's never easy. And I think when you do have more competition, like what Cape is seeing this year on the boys lacrosse side, it means a lot more when you get through and you win a title by one goal instead of by 10.
Right.
Yeah. Can you tell us maybe a story or a team or a school maybe that no one's talking about, but it's kind of sneakily having a good season?
Let's see. Let me give you a good story from a game I covered earlier this week. That's the Freeport boys lacrosse team. You know, traditionally not a lot of success there. The girls program has been very good. They won the state title last year, and they moved up to Class B, and the boys also moved up to Class B. And you think they might struggle, but they had a nice win over NYA the other day. They took a penalty late. NYA tied the score. Freeport took another penalty, meaning NYA was going man up to start overtime. It really didn't look like they were going to find a win. A new young coach, Brendan Boss, said to the guys, it's flat out. He said, we're going to kill this penalty. We're going to win adversity. We're going to win the game. That was instilled. The kids bought into it. They went out. They won the game. I thought that was really cool to see, you know, the positive messaging. Into a game. So, they're probably not at a championship level, but you know, certainly up on the up and up. You look at a team like Wells boys lacrosse team, not a lot of tradition there, but they've gotten off to a very strong start. They had a big win over Waynefleet. So it's very possible it's not going to be Waynefleet and NYA in Class C state game this year. We might get someone else in that mix. And then on an individual level, the Greeley girls lacrosse team, which has won the last two state titles, they won it last year without Ava Williams, who has returned this year from a knee injury. And she's just having a great season. It's great to see her out there. Very ebullient personality, great player. And, you know, it's nice. I'm sure there were a lot of dark days for her last year when she was sidelined and watching her teammates have all that fun. This year, she's very much in the mix, and they're very much in the mix for another championship.
You put out a tweet saying the Fort Cather Southern Edition is stopping. And again, the content's going to be going into different newspapers. How is that going to affect the coverage for those in that area? And was that a kind of a surprise that happened in your mind?
Well, I mean, there's so much flux going on in our business in general, and certainly in our papers, the main trust media. There's change constantly. And really the feeling was we were kind of duplicating coverage in Cape Elizabeth, Scarborough, South Portland. So instead of having a Southern Forecaster, we're going to split it up. The Cape and the South Portland stuff goes in the South Portland Sentry, and then the Scarborough Leader will be exclusive Scarborough content. So I'm still covering those schools the same as always. It's just being distributed a little bit differently, broken up by those towns. So you know, I guess the good news is that you know, I've been able to keep this the relationship I've had with all those schools for over 20 plus years. That's still going strong, and you know, I'll still be doing all the same coverage like Athletes of the Year and previews and all the game coverage and stuff. But you know, there's things are in flux, and as long as I can keep doing what I'm doing, I'm you know willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
That's definitely great. So recently at Thornton Academy, they announced a athletic director change after this year. The longtime TA athletic director Gary Stevens will be leaving and retiring and enjoying retirement. And coming in is the new AD Lance Johnson. So for people like me who don't know much about Lance Johnson, can you give us some thoughts about you know what he's done in his career and what he might do for TA?
Yeah, I've known Lance for a long time. He was the football coach at Scarborough. Had a great run there, won a state title, their only Class A state title back in 2017. Some of you might remember that to get to that state game, they had to beat TA in the regional final on, I think, literally the coldest night that I've ever covered a game. And they won that one decisively and won the championship. But you know, Lance took over at Portland during the 2019-2020 school year, which, as you will recall, was abbreviated in March by COVID and never completed. And then the following year with sports, certainly in the fall and the winter, there were a lot of challenges getting sports underway and then whether or not you're going to have a full season. And we didn't have any playoffs till spring of that year. So it wasn't the easiest transition for him, but I think he did a great job there. He's really, really well respected. Great guy, honest, fair. You know, certainly he's filling some big shoes. I know how well respected Gary Stevens has been there for his great run and the great success that TA has had under him. And I think Lance Johnson is going to be really kind of a seamless transition. He's going to step in and do a great job. So I think people down your way are going to be in very good hands there.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting having a different AD. I mean, we had Coach Dick Agresti before Gary. It's been a very long time since we had, you know, the last two ADs we've had have been very long serving. So very exciting. Yeah. And we'll have plenty of tributes for Gary as he retires here June 30. Just in general, I would like to throw this question out. We're in the spring season, boys across and girls across, two sports played at the same time with a lot of different rules. Some people love them, some people hate them. So again, we're making you czar of the MPA. What is one just fundamental rule that you're changing in each boys across and girls across? Maybe it's the clock, maybe it's hitting, maybe it's free position attempts. Like, what are you changing in each sport?
Oh boy, I haven't had any time to think about this. That's actually a good question. One thing I would love to change for spring sports, and let me just kind of deviate from your question a little bit. No games until after April vacation week. It's too cold. It's just not fun to be outside. And a lot of these games don't get played anyway. I know there's a big concern about getting everything in. Games always get in. If you have to play a couple doubleheaders at the end of May, you do it. If you have to play on Memorial Day, you do it. It's just the nature of the beast. But there's been some really, really cold days and days where it's raining and the teams that have turf play anyway. You know, just speaking for totally selfish reasons, I would love to see that change. You know, girls lacrosse has gone to quarters, four 12-minute quarters instead of two 25-minute halves this year. I think actually a pretty good change. It seems like it's been well-received. It almost gives the coaches a couple extra timeouts, essentially, after the first quarter, after the third quarter. So, you know, that's a change. And you know, the other thing that lacrosse does really well, guys, is they schedule top teams. And, you know, a lot of these teams make a point of having as tough a regular season schedule as you can get. You know, thankfully, unlike some sports where leagues make you play within their conference, with lacrosse, you can play out of conference. And you know, that's why Cape's playing Falmouth. You know, Falmouth's a traditional rival, but they're SMAA now. So you get games like that. It makes everyone better. There's nothing good comes of winning a game 18-0 for the winner or the loser. So you want to have as many competitive games as you can. I mean, there's going to be some that way, of course, but I think that's something that the sport has done really well and was kind of ahead of the curve on that from a lot of others.
All right, to wrap it up, we got to get your thoughts on the NFL draft, the Patriots stand pat, they get Drake May. Yep. So what are your thoughts on that? And in general, did you see any other picks that made you, you know, either be jealous or maybe like, you know, pick your eyebrow a little bit and some wacky picks. So what are your thoughts on Drake May?
I think the Pats did the right thing at number three and taking Drake May. I would have loved to have seen Marvin Harrison, but they really had to take a quarterback. And I think there was so much pressure on them to do that. I think they got the best option at number three. You know, Jaden Daniels would have been great. Caleb Williams would have been great. But I think the upside on May is very good. I think they need to be patient with him. You know, everyone's going to want him to start day one. And if he wins the job, then he will. But I think, especially with the lack of pieces around him, I think it might be good to take it a little bit slowly with him. And some of the other stuff, I mean, I don't watch enough college football to consider myself an expert by any means on this stuff. But, you know, they needed a receiver. They needed linemen. Hopefully these guys pan out. I guess, you know, time will tell. They weren't maybe the flashiest names of some of the people that that's a lot of the fans wanted. So I'm hopeful, but I think this is going to be a process. And, you know, they're not going to do what the Texans did and turn things around and go deep in the playoffs next year. I think it's going to take a while to get back to that level of being a top competitor. But I think the strides are being taken. You know, another good draft or two. You know, hopefully they can fill in some holes in free agency or with trades as time goes on. But we'll see what happens.
I got the Falcons.
Yeah, I was about to say, I got to get your thoughts on the Falcons because, you know, with Kirk Cousins yeah. and then Michael Penix and not
that
telling
was
Kirk Cousins. Yeah.
I mean, that's – who knows? I mean, they're the Falcons for a reason. They haven't won for – I mean, it's quite a reach. If it winds up paying off down the road, it's going to look like a brilliant move. I mean, at face value initially, it looks like a kind of a crazy move. But, you know, we've seen a lot of wild things over the years. You know, people trading away their whole draft class for one player. You know, there have been some reaches, and occasionally you hit – I think you have to take risks sometimes – but it's just strange when you committed so much money to someone that you expect is going to play for a few years and then essentially bring someone else for competition right away. I can't imagine Kirk Cousins is very happy about this.
Yeah. He can be happy though about the like $130 million.
Yes. He's got a lot of reasons to be happy. Yes. For that. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see how they do.
Yeah, it definitely will. And an interesting draft class as well. I liked it. It was interesting. I thought a lot of picks were up in the air in the top 10, which was fun to watch. But Drake May was not the pick I wanted. But hey, you know, that's the draft for you. All right, that is going to do it for this interview with Michael Hoffer. Again, thank you for coming in for the Spring Sports Update, and we will 100% see you again in the future for some more updates. But go enjoy the nice spring, summer weather in Maine.
Stay warm out there.
Yeah, well, today looks actually decent, so I'll do that. Thanks for bearing with me today, guys. Great to talk to you always, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Awesome. All right, thank you.
I want to thank Michael Hoffer for coming in again. Always great to have him on. And like I said there at the end, we'll definitely see him in the future for more fall sports, winter sports updates, or maybe to talk just about Patriots. We never know. Also, just want to quickly apologize for any of those technical issues. Obviously, as many people know, internet's not always great at all times. So we had some technical issues with that, but still had a good conversation with Michael Hoffer and hope to see him again. And we'll head right into our take of the week that has nothing to do with sports. And Jeff, I'll have you go first.
Okay, I'm cheating a little bit. I'm having like one and a half this time, okay? One of them has to do with sport. Well, this one has to do with sports. So it's really, it belongs in a different
segment. Take that has to do with sports during the take that has nothing to do with sports segment?
I couldn't fit it into the other rundown. I'm just saying I hate the trend now that we're seeing of NFL teams releasing these videos from their draft war rooms after the fact, making it look like everyone's the smartest guy in the room. Like they're all like, oh my God, he fell to us at number six. Whoa. And they're high fiving and shaking. Every team does that. No one's being like, oh crap, now we have to take this guy. They're always going to do that for the cameras. And the reality is half of those players are not going to be good. And most of the people in that room are going to get fired within 2 or 3 years anyway. So it's just, for me, it's just the post-draft mortem. I hate it. It's like, I'm not interested in that stuff. Like, it all looks the same. So that's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So my actual take that has nothing to do with sports is internet trends. The worst internet trend, the worst Twitter trend, maybe of all time, is this stupid one where it's like, oh, you want to know what this guy's all about? Look between T and N in your keyboard. Or look between Z and V in your keyboard. The dumbest thing ever. And the worst part is everyone knows it's dumb, but they still keep doing it and reacting to those posts. And it's like they'll show a picture and then there's like one letter and you're supposed to like figure out what that letter means. It's so stupid. Most of it is just engagement farming. I hate it and stop it.
All right. I mean, that's a quick one. I agree. I don't like content where people – it's like the content is like just trying to get people to click a link. yeah. or to open up your live stream or to, you know, go on your page. That's dumb. I agree. I don't think it also doesn't matter. I don't know how someone can post that content and be happy with that content.
They're just looking to make money. Most of them, they're looking because again, on Twitter now, you can, if you're verified, you make money off it, and it's just stupid. It's farming, it's phishing, it shouldn't be allowed. Come on, yeah, Elon, get it together.
I did see one of those. It's like, I see the one I see a lot is like, this is the best player in this league. And it says, look between H and L, which is JK, yeah. and which is just so
it's like, oh, you're so funny. I've never seen that before.
My take that has nothing to do with sports is something that happened to me. Well, it didn't happen to me. It happens all the time. But one of my favorite foods of all time, something that I can eat anytime in different forms or varieties, is buffalo chicken. I'm a huge like fried chicken with buffalo sauce on it. I'm a big grilled chicken with buffalo sauce, you know, grilled chicken wraps with buffalo. But recently I had a buffalo chicken mac and cheese, another great dish, and the buffalo chicken was just bad. It just wasn't done well. And it made me think about this. Is it really that hard to make good buffalo chicken? It's chicken and buffalo sauce. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'll get your perspective on it. But, like, I've had the best buffalo chicken ever. Crispy. It's tender. It's cooked well. Not too much buffalo. It's not just, like, the generic Frank's buffalo sauce. It's a good buffalo sauce. You know, it's cut up well. And I've also had some where it's just so bad. And I'm like, how can you mess up chicken and buffalo sauce? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's how you cook the chicken, right? And it's what sauce you use. So if you're frying the chicken, you got to make sure it's pretty crispy on the outside. I think that's what you'll see is sometimes it'll be like the shredded chicken. But if you do the shredded chicken, you still have to douse it in buffalo sauce. That's the problem. It's, for me, there's like a local place down the street, Saco Bay Variety, and they have buffalo wings there. And I don't know what sauce they use, but this sauce is unbelievable because it's not just spicy, but it's got some flavor to it. And I like the sauces that are spicy, but also some flavor. Frank's is fine, but it doesn't have that whole lot of flavor. How can you screw it up? You're lazy. You know, for me, like, I have a lot of things when it comes to like restaurants like that. Like, mm-hmm. any restaurant that's not cutting their own French fries, you know, unless you're McDonald's. If you're McDonald's, fine. But if you're, you know, you look at Pier Fries, you look at the hamburger stand over here in Biddeford, I'll give them a shout out. They do those kind of like hand cut fries so much better. Same with the buffalo chicken. If you're getting like the pre-made chicken tenders, like from Sysco, you know, the food distribution place, and you're just frying them, make sure you fry them perfectly. Make sure you get the ones with a little bit of meat on them, and make sure you're dousing them in buffalo sauce. No one wants a chicken tender that's half doused in buffalo sauce. So it's just about laziness, to be honest. And no, people are going to, and they charge an arm and a leg for it. And buffalo sauce isn't that expensive.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's laziness.
I'm definitely going to have to keep trying new places. I got to find a spot. Like, I know Saco Bay Variety, not a huge fan of the food there, but I need to find a spot in Maine, regardless of buffalo chicken, of just where I can go and get a wrap, get a sandwich, whatever it might be, BLT, you know, turkey, what, a ham club, turkey club, whatever, that I can just like get any time of the day and enjoy it. Cause like, I don't know if there, I mean, do you know any spots in Maine where like you can go get a sandwich or something like that?
Yeah, if I'm doing a sandwich, like a sub, maybe not a wrap, I'm going to OG's in Biddeford, which used to be George's Italians. Like, George still exists, but there's a new owner. And then the son and daughter of the old owner decided to open up their other a new shop. So that's where I go to for sandwiches. They don't have wraps, but it's very basic sandwiches like Italians. And they do have like chicken salad and other things too. So that's like my go-to in downtown Biddeford for that. But honestly, Jersey Mike's is pretty good. Like,
ooh, that's, I'm a huge Saco, Jersey Mike's guy.
And I was like, oh, Jersey Mike's is expensive. But boy, it's pretty fire no matter what you get.
I'm a big I get all my stuff Mike's way with strawberry vinaigrette. It's so good.
I don't like
so
that
good.
Part of it,
all right, we'll finish up this episode with some trivia. Current record, Zach is 1-2, or 1-1, I should say. 1-1. And you are 0-1-1. I gave you the overtime loss because you kind of got it. I forget what it was, but I think you got like half the question a part of the question. So give me your trivia question of the week.
All right, so Bruins and Maple Leafs are obviously playing a game 7. These teams have played each other in the playoffs quite a bit over the. They're both, I think, both original 8 teams, or at least, you know, very historic. Bruins have dominated the series, not this series, obviously, but the lifetime series between the two in the past bit. So, my trivia question to you is: who was president of the United States the last time the Maple Leafs beat the Bruins in a playoff series?
Dude,
you gotta get the year, and then you gotta know who's president. Then
I don't know how this keeps happening, but my question is: the exact, not the exact same, but it's pretty much the exact same. And you know, my question was, what year was the last time?
Well, I know now because I just looked it up.
Oh my gosh! Every time.
Well, no, I should get that right. I get a win. Just because.
No, no, because of course I do. Just because you.
The only reason I'm getting is because you went first.
No. What? You went? No,
I went first because I went first. If you would have gone first, I would have got it 100% correct, and then you. I mean, maybe you would have got my.
Yeah, but because because you looked it up, No, no, I'm gonna give you a different one. But so.
Do you know the answer?
The answer, the year that Toronto beat Boston in the series, the last time they beat him in a series, was 1959. And the president, I took AP U.S. History. Brandon Parisi is going to be so mad at me if I don't know this. 1959. Okay, let me do some. Reagan was the 70s. Johnson was the 40s. Oh, God. Roosevelt was the Great Depression. I think. What other presidents did we have? Oh, my God.
Like 40 more. Washington or Lincoln, I'll tell you that
much. Yeah. I'm crossing names off now. The 50s was... Okay, crazy. Just, I don't even know. I'm just going to say it. I know I'm wrong. Lyndon B. Johnson.
Okay, incorrect. First of all, you're fired. Like, you were wrong on all of those. Reagan was in the 80s. FDR.
No, okay. Time out. Reagan was late 70s into early 80s.
He was not. Reagan was president from 1980 until 1988.
All that AP US history did me no good.
And then you said Johnson was in the 40s. No, he was in the 70s. No, the answer was Dwight D. Eisenhower, former general of the United States. He was president in 1959. And then he lost to Richard Nixon, who then had to resign. Yeah. So, yeah, no, you're way off. So anyway, you're a loser on that one. All right. Give me another one. You have 20 seconds to figure it out.
20 seconds?
It's not even fair because you looked up my answer too. I mean, maybe not exactly the answer, but you knew the year. You should have known that. That was.
I didn't have to look up your answer because I.
You knew it off the top of your head that 1959 is the last time they won.
Here's the reason, because I've obviously watched every single game, and NHL and TNT reuses their graphics.
Yeah.
And they have that graphic up. Oh, Boston, Toronto hasn't beaten them in a series since 1959. Okay. How about this? This is just. Oh, gosh. I don't think I can come up with one on the spot here. This one is not, this one isn't even that hard of trivia. I just want to see if I can test your knowledge.
You'd be like, list the Edmonton Oilers starting five.
No. There is a current player on the Toronto Maple Leafs roster who had a father who also played for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Very, very famous Toronto Maple Leaf. Can you give me the name of who this guy's son that currently plays in the Maple Leafs and the father?
I can give you the father's name's Ty Domi.
Yep. Do you know what his son's name is?
Kai Domi. I don't know. I have no idea. George.
I try a little harder.
Was it Canadian Ty? I mean Ty. Like I don't even know what.
It's such a generic name.
Jonathan.
How? I'll give you this. It's the same. It's three letters too.
Ty. Ted. Ned.
I don't know.
I'm totally off.
Max Domi.
I mean, they showed his dad the other day when he said Domi. I'm like, oh, Domi. This Ty Domi. Ty yep. Domi's gained a lot of weight since he stopped playing.
How about this? At the end, you know what? I now that I'm thinking about it, your reasoning about how, like, if I had gone first, you would have known 1959. You would have gotten it right. I'll give you
one,
a correct
one. That's what
one,
I am.
One and one. And I'm one and two.
One and two, yeah. Okay, yeah. So I'm all slightly right. in the lead, but.
All right, what we're going to have to do next week is I'm going to say, all right, Jeff, your topic has to come from basketball and mine has to come from
The easiest way to do it is say my trivia will come from your takes and your trivia comes from my takes. How about that?
That
makes it easy. So we'll look and say, all right, your three topics, I'll pick something from yours and they shouldn't overlap.
Yeah, because now we've had 2 weeks in a row where the coincidences
I'm just ESP, baby.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, that is going to do it for episode number 8 of the Main Rundown Podcast. As always, follow us on X and Instagram at Main Rundown Pod. And be sure to follow along and be ready for some big interviews coming up. As we mentioned before, hoping to have Gabe Hoffman-Johnson on for some more USL talk. Really, really dive into that because we're really excited about that. And in the future, we've got some other people that we're looking to get on as well and some great content. So thank you all for listening. And Jeff and I will see you all very soon.